and welcome to the Tech and Toast podcast. We simplify the way you buy and manage your hospitality tech. You can click through to techontoast.community where you can search our marketplace, attend our events, grab your free tech audit, and we will help you visualize your tech stack as you grow into 2024. Meanwhile, summer in Australia.
Hey, Louis, do you think we should sponsor the Tech on Toast podcast? I mean, I really like Chris, and I really like what it's all about.
Yeah, I think that's a ripper idea, LP. It's a perfect fit for what we do at Red Cat.
I mean, I agree. I'm just not sure how we get our message across around, like, Red Cat specializing in multi-site groups, you know, like cafe groups and fast casual groups and QSRs and all that.
Maybe we mention some of our customers like Nando's in Australia, New Zealand, the restaurants at the Aussie Open, Boost Juice International. I mean, they've got over 700 sites.
Hang on. I think that was the sponsors. This is the Tech on Toast podcast. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the next episode of the Tech on Toast podcast. And today I'm delighted to be joined by Connor Sheridan, founder of Nori. Connor, welcome to BrewDog.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, it's a mental day, right?
Crazy.
You just said to me, productivity's at a highest day, right? Doing podcasts in the middle of running a trade show. But it's great fun. How are you enjoying the day?
Yeah, really, really amazing. I think I just said as I came in, the energy in the room, power of community, amazing brands, operators, everyone under one roof. So kudos to you.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Well, it's not, I wish it was just me. There's a lot of lovely people who help me in the background, so it's been really cool. And I think what's really cool, actually, is that I love about tech, and we were just talking about this before we started, that a lot of you guys have a foot, I suppose, in hospitality, in operational sense, and none more than you.
Yeah.
So before we get into Nori and talk about Nori, let's talk about Mad Egg and WhatsApp and how you kind of ended up there, because that wasn't your original. That's not where you started, was it?
No. Bit of a random career path, I would say. So I started out in finance in the city here, and then back in Ireland working in like quantitative finance, which is basically a fancy word for lots of spreadsheets and lots of screens.
Thank you for clearing that up for me.
Yeah, about 12 hours a day. I think like when I was working in that, I'd always an eye elsewhere. I wanted to do something myself or do something entrepreneurial. I'd worked in hospitality all of my teens through uni. Afterwards, I'd actually initially started looking at like franchising opportunities at the time, thinking this would be like a passive investment in huge air quotes.
Oh, you were wrong.
Yeah, it's like anything to do with hospitality could be passive. Yeah, the complete opposite, right? The more and more I met these brands or these operators, I started to maybe get a little bit of hubris to go, look, I think if I really got into the weeds here, I might be able to do something myself that's up to a decent standard. I have a bit more creative control, and that kind of led to Mad Egg. So I partnered up with an operator based in Dublin, Stephen, who had about 20, 25 years experience, kind of the old mature head next to my kind of manic naivety. Yeah. So we partnered up and launched Mad Egg, which was like a free-range farm to Sando, we call it. So free-range fried chicken sandwiches, not too dissimilar to like a Chick-fil-A or something like that over in the US.
Yeah.
So we did that in 2018, so swapped kind of the trading floor for the kitchen floor.
Love that.
Similar energy and similar language, but obviously, like, very different.
Crappy pay, though.
Yeah, for sure. No, it was amazing, right? An amazing experience. I think, like, going into that was overwhelming, exciting. Like, it was my first time building a business.
Yeah.
Obviously, the first time owning or running a hospitality venture versus working in one. And I think when you have all of your life savings in it, the stresses of that make it slightly...
makes it a little bit more important.
Yeah, slightly different. I think coming from, like, a really kind of data-based or quantitative background from finance to landing in hospitality was a bit of a shock, right?
Well, I think I find that riveting because and we'll get onto it, it's probably the reason Nori was born, right? But the fact that we are very driven by our gut, and like I've just been meeting former colleagues who are all of my former Carluccio's colleagues are all at Pizza Pilgrims now, and they're all here today, and we were just chatting, laughing about the past and how we literally would have Excel spreadsheets on our phone which you couldn't read, shared by boards that hadn't read them anyway, you know, irrelevant information for people who were busy making decisions on the ground. And we never really looked at data. And someone told me later in my career, always start with the data, right? But earlier on in the career, it was very much, how do you feel? You know, how do you feel about this shift? How do you feel about this person? Which is still important, but it's your background is so different from that, that coming into Mad Egg and actually into the industry, you must have thought, wow, these people are a different breed.
Yeah, 100%. Like, obviously, I had some experience of it over, like, between about 5 or 10 years of working in the space, but definitely not from, like... an operational leadership role. So for sure, right? I think like every, as you said, database decision making came from an environment whereby if you didn't have a quantitative analysis over what the outcome would be or what was the input to a decision, you couldn't make it, right?
You would just blow hospitality people's minds with that. Yeah.
So walk into a restaurant and you're kind of wondering why things are being prepped in the kitchen or what's being ordered or why certain people are standing around, right? And you're kind of going, how do we make these decisions? And it's like, oh, well, Tuesdays are usually like this, or this is kind of what it was like yesterday.
That's because it's Johnny. He's just not very good at that.
Yeah. And that's not like a slide on the industry. I just think like people get into it and they're like, ultimately you're focused on like the old adage of enlightened hospitality or delivering great experiences. You don't typically come from a financial or operational or database background, right? That's not your forte, right? So I think you get pretty far from a gut based if you've been in the industry for quite a while. But unfortunately, with where the industry's at, with the fine margins, it's those edge cases that can kind of take it all away from you if you're not on top of it, right? So definitely a big shocker. So we grew that business pretty quickly, then about 5 venues and 150 people in about 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
So it was that kind of scaling experience to go, all right, the more venues you open, it's the same model, it's kind of the same approach, but you can see kind of variability in them depending on who's working in the venues. So variability in like your P&L, or variability in the consistency of the product or the service. I think hospitality people, while they're gut-based, are almost psychotic for consistency. There's a checklist or an SOP for everything because you want to.
Oh, we
customer.
Love a checklist. Yeah, I'm surprised I didn't get you to tick something when you walked in here today.
100%, yeah. So no, yeah. And I'm going off on a bit of a tangent there, but it was really that experience of scaling that out.
No, I think it's important, right? And I think always behind the tech, the reason we do the podcast actually is to talk, why did it happen, right? Yeah. Why did Nori happen? And this is a big reason why, right? Because you've gone in there, obviously different sectors experience, come in there, grown a company with an experienced operator. And you just talked about it then, the nuances that happen across growth when you're growing multiple sites. And we've got people in here today with hundreds of sites, people with 10 sites, you know, all different scales. And I think they're all experiencing that problem of growth and data with it and actually running operations now is evergreen, right? I always think the problems are people are kind of the same in essence, but actually the way we can manage that and the way we can manage the outputs have got easier because of tech. So, I mean, I won't go too much into it, but in terms of Nori, I'm guessing this is why it became a thing, right? That you thought, I can fix this.
Yeah, 100%, right? Again, to revert back to my previous experience, you're using really leading products, right? We were creating like algorithms to predict pricing moves and doing all of these things. So really kind of rich data sets. So we were using different products in Matic. And I think similar to, as you mentioned, different scale, but the traditional SMB journey is you have like your EPOS and that's the most data you have initially. And then, oh wait, I need a product for staffing people. And then I actually might get something else and for procurement or managing your gross margin and then something else for with safety. And you start to layer all these products up. And then eventually you've got like 5 or 6 systems that don't really speak to each other. They tend to be more kind of like digitized input tools for teams are doing the work on them, but you're not so much thinking about the work. So to actually align them really closely to your P&L or the consistency of guest experience or margins is quite hard. And it's quite hard to get the teams focused on how they can influence those numbers. So early on, I tried to build my own models to overlay those tools, which is basically some bits of automation or smarts to go, here's what we can expect for today, this day part, or the next few weeks. Here's decisions.
And how did that team react to that? Because obviously they're experiencing your, I suppose, attitude. You call it naivety, actually. It's funny. But your approach to it, was it a good reaction? How did the seasoned operators take what you were sending to them?
Yeah, I think so. Right? I think they were like, look, fire ahead. If you think you can make a difference, go for it.
Have a
right?
go, yeah.
Yeah, look, I think from an operational point of view, we were building the business on cash flow and profits, right? There's no investments in that. So scaling it out is you need to get your EBITDA as large as possible to be in a healthy position. Restaurants aren't like tech companies. You can't have losing periods for too long, right? You need to make profits.
Having
profit.
A loss leader is never great in restaurants.
So from an ownership point of view, obviously people are super interested in trying to up that. And then from an in-store or an in-venue point of view, I think teams want anything that can make their lives easier, right? Like I always talk about like a restaurant manager's role is almost like an entrepreneur in residence or the leader of an orchestra, right? You have to make everything work in perfect sequence from what the guests experience, what the teams are doing, to keeping the financials run. And it's an hour-by-hour basis. It's not even a week-by-week or a month-by-month. So if you can take away some of the pain or toil or kind of time involved in some of those things, it can really help. So, and for us, like the systems or the early kind of iteration of Nori really helped. We got pretty significant EBITDA, like over 20%. In around 25%, which is pretty good for the industry in terms of standard.
20% is the magic number, my friend. Yeah. If I got that, I was a happy boy.
Yeah, 100% on a consistent basis for every store.
Yeah.
The teams were spending much less time on those kind of activities.
And so, where were you getting the results? Was it around labour, food? Were you getting it in certain areas, or were you getting big wins in one particular area?
It's across everything, right? I think, like, ultimately, you start with your prime costs as a hospitality operator. You need to drive a consistent enough revenue number to achieve everything else, right? Like, so we were lucky we did that. So that was important across your gross margin, your COGS, any kind of consistency there, like really nailing an acceptable level of waste, right? What it depends on your business model, what that is. We are obviously one protein, one product, so it could be a little bit logistical. So it's quite tight there. We were a table service, so your labor line is always going to be a little bit larger than if you're like a counter serve model. So we got a good bit there. We had a pretty wide range, though. We had from a 30-seater to 175-seater restaurant, right? So there's quite differences in the model there. So to get those kind of those consistent numbers was good, right? So I'd say, I think it's across your prime costs, ultimately, is where we started. But it's the consistency of getting that number every day, every week, every month, every quarter, every year. You don't have we had a shit January or June or July, and then we'll make it back in Christmas and hope for the best, right? So it's just making sure you know what your economic model is for every month or every day, and the teams know, and they're able to hit that.
I think it's amazing. I mean, the labor side of things, I think, is really interesting, because I think the industry's already struggled with it, and I think there's been some successes. Obviously, there's been advancement in tech, as I said, in terms of workforce management and managing scheduling. But still, I think, especially, it's really interesting that you've managed to take table management from different size locations and deliver a great result in both models. I think if anyone's listening to that's worth the conversation, Nori, alone, because that for me is the holy grail, being able to get an estate behaving in a way that's predictable and delivering consistent margin, because I think it's a huge challenge for the operators, because location drives this result. There's roadworks outside today or whatever it might be. There's so many different factors, but the one factor you can control is what you're putting on the rotor or what you're dealing with in front of you. And I think we've always struggled to get that consistent across a group. I think there's always 10 out of 100 who fail to get their labour in. It was my job, right? That's what I had to do every week, just tell people, sort your labour out. Obviously, I was a bit more helpful than that.
Yeah.
By Nori.
Yeah, 100%.
And are you... are you finding that those benefits now are down? So not with obviously Maddox, but now you're transferring that into the real world. Are you finding your customers getting the same kind? Are you getting the same kind of feedback from them as you did from your team?
Yeah, definitely. Right, I think, like, obviously Nori moving over to that is a much more robust kind of product in terms of what it serves, but the same kind of ethos is still the same. Right, we're built as the product. We're effectively, like, just supposed to give people an understanding of what we do. We're an AI-powered operating system.
Yeah.
And that means, basically, whether you're a CFO, ops director, or the newest server, you're going to be working off Nori for most of your, like, core workflows each day. So we would cover everything to do with, if you think about, like, a P&L, your prime cost. So your whole sales line, COGS line, labor line. But wrap around that, right? So everything from onboarding to payroll, staffing, scheduling in between, COGS, procurement, to recipe creation, all that kind of stuff. And why that's important is we're able to kind of consolidate most of the core data points for a restaurant and an overarching business into one platform.
Right.
So if you think about it, you have everything to do with your revenue and your customer-facing sales, your COGS, your labor, all embedded into one product. So you have one place to go to run the business, to manage the business, and to scale it. Irrespective of what country you're in, how your venues are operating, what model of your franchise or equity owned. So that means you have the attention of a CFO and you have the attention of the operations teams. So you have everyone working in one place, which is useful. You have the data. That enables us then to really apply AI in an operational way, because we have that core data. So that means we can then, on a venue-by-venue basis, really do super accurate predictions and suggestions across those different lines you touched on. So that could be demand prediction, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Is there going to be tube strikes today? What does seasonality look like in your business? What would BrewDog Waterloo expect to turn over today for every part of the day part? Subsequently, then down the line, what should your chefs be prepping? What should they be ordering? How you should staff your team and when? So that kind of coaching is done by the models, or done by the product on the venue by venue level, and then ultimately, if you have 100 venues, that compounds to give you a desirable result for a group. So you have every venue in the brand performing well and hitting their EBITDA number.
Yeah.
With, obviously, the guidance of Nori, that will compound up to give the group kind of outsized results. We've seen that with our customers, to say you don't have the top quartile and then the bottom quartile. You've everybody at a consistent level.
That's
operating
insane.
Operating to the best of their ability or the best of their P&L ability. So
yes.
What's the best outcome you think you can possibly get from a unit economics point of view? And Nori looks to deliver that or help to deliver that.
And I suppose, and the ability that then gives you is that as a group, forecasting and looking down the road a bit becomes a lot more, I suppose, not safe is not the word I'm looking for, but in terms of, you know, we've got that consistency leads to predictability, yeah. Right? And the more consistent you are in delivering your numbers, the easier it is to grow or just run what you have already. And I think the interesting way is you've got everybody in the one place,
yeah.
Which I think we've struggled with. And there's a huge conversation, I'm sure you hear in the industry, about best in class versus all in one. Mm-hmm. And I think when you talk about the CFO and the waiter working on the same system on a daily basis, is pretty powerful.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I think, again, born from my experience, using five or six products, trying to pull it together. You don't have a consistent view of the world. Mm. Your teams don't, which is not an ideal state, right? Just some great products out there that can service specific workflows. And then you look at, like, air quotes, all-in-one. Can maybe be too wide and not deep enough for certain areas, or grew through acquisition and can feel like those are our solutions. So, like, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to go, we want to be best in class, but broad enough to be an operating system, which means that people will analyze you or review you with a lens of what does a world-class BI product or workforce product or inventory product or procurement product look like. Does Nori stack up to that, and does it have the impact? And, yeah, you kind of have to back yourself, right?
I agree, and I actually, it's one of the reasons I love what you're doing, because actually you are backing yourself, aren't you? And you are saying that actually, well, from, and I think, as I mentioned before, because you have that actual experience of doing it yourself and proving it yourself within your own business, then you can come over and quite easily, not easily, but overlay it into other people's businesses and say, look, this makes sense to us. It should make sense to you.
Yeah.
And I think, are you seeing, because waste and food cost and that kind of, that world, that cost base is always been a bit of a problem as well. Are you managing to find consistency there or help your customers find consistency there as well?
Yeah, 100%. So I think, like, if you think about the challenges facing hospitality or the unique challenges, any business, right, if you ignore the segment where maybe the concept didn't land or the product quality is not there, because it's quite hard to solve for that. And I think in any industry, if it's tech or if it's hospitality, that will wash you out eventually. But assuming you've got those down, the unique challenges are obviously the costs, right, or the cost relative to kind of the profitability. So what I mean by that is, like, price elasticity of customers only goes so far. You can only charge so much for a dish before they won't go anymore, which means you really have to optimize on your P&L. That is, like, gross margin, labor line, and then obviously below that, the variable cost that you can control. There's obviously challenges from that inflationary point of view, but equally we've got huge challenges now where the shape and the kind of profile of people in the industry is shifting as well. So that gut feel where you're saying, what's Johnny doing? Those Johnny's, aren't so many of them anymore, right, that have been there for 10, 20, 30 years. So if you take those kind of shifting tides a little bit to go, that kind of, A, creates a bit of a pressure cooker situation for operators to go, how do we get consistency, how do we scale? But B, creates an opportunity for something like Nori to go, how do you take the brain of the brand to say this is how it needs to be run and put it into a product? So it'll de-risk it as you scale. So irrespective of, like, maybe the experience levels or skill sets of some team members, you can kind of coach that. And that's all across the board. So I use an example. You asked a question there on COGS. And I used an example of demand prediction, right? So if we can get super accurate demand prediction, we can then, with a really high degree of accuracy, say, here's what you should be prepping every day. Here's what your CPU should be prepping. Here's what a restaurant should be prepping. Here's what you should be ordering. You can package them. You can send them. You can actually even then automate the whole process back to your accounting system. So that whole area can be looked after, and teams can come in and go, we know with confidence the data is correct. Because we own a lot of the data sources, we know it's going to be correct. And we can say, hey, look, with confidence, prepare the best food you can prepare, deliver the best experience you can deliver. The numbers will look after themselves, assuming you operate like this.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing, right, about that trust as well from the operator. And I think we used to have PAR level sheets, but they were manual, right? They were Cognos. We used to use Cognos and Excel and whatnot. And we used to build them up, but it was, and no one ever really bought into it because they would break, you know, because we would someone put some numbers in, then one day it would spike and then it would break or whatever. So we couldn't really get the teams buying, but it was the beginning of what you were doing, you know. I'm not saying we came up with Nori first, but it was the beginning of people trying to look down the road and automate data in a way. We had a great data team at Colleges at that point. They were kind of ahead of themselves, but they really looked down the road of what they could do in terms of helping the teams, but it never really got there. And I think if you can convince teams that data is right, safe, on what you did last year, on what you did yesterday, on what you did at 3 o'clock yesterday, even with this wet weather and whatnot, then you get that buy-in, then it becomes super powerful.
100%. And I think a lot of our, a lot of what we do or our challenges or that we've seen in the industry is that buy-in, right? That change management. I think once you can prove the, the data is correct and the decisions that are suggested will lead to a good outcome, then teams will buy into it. But if you lose that trust, then that could be difficult, or just changes in ways of working. As you said, if you're in a more traditional working setting, any change can be stressful, particularly when you're operating at such a high pace and like a hospitality business. So a lot of our work is the kind of change management, project management side.
I was
going
to say then, so when you've sold to X restaurant chain and you're going in, is it quite consultative then in terms of how you then onboard them and or help them manage the first bit of the process?
Yeah, for sure. We have like two operating principles internally. One of them is think like an operator, and another one is deliver like that hospitality experience, right? Yep. So ultimately for us, that means an operator is really busy, on their feet, running around, a million things happening each day, could take a Zoom call with the iPhone underneath their chin, kind of hitting the ceiling.
So true. Yeah. I literally did one here last night, but
so like, think about that context when you're trying to ask for things or try to get time there, and then put that into a broader project concept or context. So what we try to do is the heavy lift. So ultimately, take your data from your current set of disparate systems or ERPs, put it into Nori. The first time you use it, your team uses it, it's ready to go. So that means, A, for us, you get quick time to value, quick onboarding, which means you're happier as a customer.
Sticky.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that is just something we were always committed to up front, that we were going to do that. Like, we just didn't want to be a product where, you've signed up now, go find your way here, right?
Yeah. Six months later, you're still wondering why you signed.
No, yeah, 100%, right? So I think
I think that's quite common still. I think with that, you know, I'm not brandishing everyone, but I still think there's solutions like that that get bought in that you're still scratching your head a bit after, like, you know, 3-4 months thinking, not that it's not working, just still not onboarded. Hmm. We're still waiting for X to turn on or whatever it might be. And that is a massive turn-off, I imagine. Well, you know what, as you just mentioned, the Zoom call running around with their phone, also a tech, right? If they try it once, twice, it doesn't work. Or what they call doesn't working is different to what you would call doesn't work. But you know, if there's something that's not there at hand straight away, the buy-in disappears very quickly, I would think.
Yeah, 100%. As I said, it's an industry where error by error matters, right?
Yeah.
It's not like you have, if you're 4, 6, 8 weeks into something, you're not seeing the value of it, or it's degrading the P&L.
Yeah, for sure.
The risk is too big, right? You might only, if you have 1 month of poor profitability, like a wipe out a year of returns for a venue, right? So you just have to have that top of your mind.
And you mentioned AI, which is, we've had various people on the past few episodes talking about AI. And I know it can be a buzzword with ChatGPT and everything when it popped up last year. But how is it driving Nori's, I suppose, the way that Nori works and the way Nori supports operators?
Yeah, twofold. But before I jump into that, it's interesting to say about ChatGPT, because when we started out, people were like, we don't want AI in the business. Don't trust it. We definitely saw a huge 180 last year.
Marketing have changed. Literally, the marketing panel, then we brought it up about 3 or 4 times. And I think it's interesting that if you can see it, right, you go on LinkedIn, you read blogs, whatever. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but people have got to be careful about that, just editing what they get out of it. But it's obviously driving a lot of content, especially. I don't know what it's doing in terms of your world, but in terms of front-facing content, you can see it being used a lot more than it, well, probably 100% more than it was last year.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely can see it. I think for us, we always say AI is a feature and not a solution.
Yeah.
So, like, what is the problem you're trying to solve? For us, I mentioned tough kind of margin environment, teams needing more support than ever in terms of their skill sets or experience. Lean margins, so you can't overload it with support staff. You put that all together and go, okay, how can you apply AI into this? As I mentioned, we pulled all the data together. So we have your P&L. So we have your P&L live in Nori, and that's kind of what you work off.
Yeah.
But it's the data analysis, right? Number one. So you've got really complex data sets. So if you're trying to predict revenue, you look at last year, you look at recent trends, but you have to look at all sorts of external factors, like events, as I said, like one-offs or consistent.
Yeah.
Even the weather, all these kind of things, right? In one instance, to do like a demand prediction, how does that change over time? How does different locales, so if you're in Waterloo versus if you're in Newcastle, what changes, what can you expect? So quite complex data analysis for a demand prediction, but making it accurate, right? And doing it immediately. So that's like one example. So you look at like the automation of that exercise, that means less time have to be spent on that. The value is more accurate demand prediction. So that for us is a good outcome. Equally from, we look at like our managed payroll service, we're able to automate a lot of the payroll side. So
that's huge.
If you're literally scaling a business, you know yourselves, every two or three venues, you probably need another payroll operator.
Yeah,
or
I call
bookkeeper.
It a Sandra. Everyone's got a Sandra, yeah. Right? Who unfortunately presses the payroll button or does the Excel sheet, whatever. And there's still a lot of them out there.
Mm.
And as you say, as you grow, you need another one of those people until you automate it.
Yeah, so we look at like, I suppose, best way to explain it is twofold. There's in-venue automation and in-venue use of AI. So that could be demand prediction, staffing, procurement, what to prep in the kitchen. So in-store, how do you take like complex data sets, make them into easy actions?
Yeah.
So things you need a lot of different data points. So that could be predicting, like I said, like what you're going to sell, what you should prep, what you should order, who you should staff. That's in-venue. And then you look at like support functions. And we look at the value chain to go, how can we look at applying AI or automation towards payroll? So for example, if you can do that in a fashion where it can scale non-linearly, so you could open 100 venues for pretty stable, flat cost with Nori. There's a huge upside there versus having to hire that role for every two venues. And then in the future, obviously going into things like procurement. So rather than having to have really robust procurement teams, when you can use automation or use products that can do that,
yep,
you can scale that, right? So that business that has 100 venues can operate with or get more from less in terms of headcount, but obviously have a higher group margin. And then the in-store benefits from a model that's whole job is just to analyze, predict, and kind of coach. That's where I think the benefits are, right? I think that's what the best, for us, that's the use case of AI. But we didn't start with AI and go, how do we put this into the restaurants? Yeah. It was, here's all the problems I face personally, or operators are facing. What is the best application of technology we can find to solve them? And AI was the answer to that.
I think you mentioned a few things there, procurement particularly. And then I was at Prime Minister on the board until I left that role last job I was in. And the procurement side of Prime Minister was huge, right, on the butter, whatever we were buying for the pie ingredients. And it became not even a one. I mean, it was two, three, nearly four people involved in that process as it got, yeah, with Brexit, as it became more complex. And they were just turning to data as I was leaving. They were just turning to automating that, trying to find a way to shrink that down and make that a lot more predictable, consistent, something they could trust. And so I think if you scale that across, think about how many businesses are out there that require that support. I think it's huge, right? I don't know how you feel when you're selling in. Is there still a long way to go, as in terms of what people are adopting?
I think it's accelerated super quickly.
Yeah.
Firstly, because of what you just said around the mainstreamization of ChatGPT, now everyone's, yeah, kind of buzzed about AI, so people, yeah, are interested, and they kind of understand that they can apply it to their businesses to.
And it's not going to kill the world, yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And then from the economic climate as well, right? I think like tough times force action, right? Yep. So if you have a period where you're feeling kind of cost pressures or employment pressures to find roles, particularly here, or find people for roles, you have to take action, right? So I think those two things are driving faster adoption. So even on the payroll piece, we saw huge adoption from enterprise brands, whereby we didn't think that. We thought, okay, look, you think an SMB, they're probably using an outsourced finance office or something. This will make sense for them. It's probably one-tenth of the cost. Why wouldn't they, right? It's part of the product. But the enterprise businesses probably won't buy into this. But we actually saw the reverse. They were more interested initially. So that was interesting. And then even we just launched an AI-driven or a smart-driven production facility at scale. So the production facility would take in, basically aggregate all the demand for hundreds of venues,
wow,
create production plans for their whole teams.
Love that.
To then procure out from a production facility using smart ordering, smart production plans to optimize staffing, what to produce, and then send them all out. So that whole piece is being run by models. Again, we would have thought that, okay, the kind of mid-market who are using CPUs to scale will buy into this, fast-growing brands, but it was the enterprise businesses that are like, we need this.
Yeah, I think so, because I think when you're looking at it from a, you know, from an enterprise point of view, from the helicopter view, their costs are a burden. I mean, all costs are burdens, but in a small business, you can react tomorrow and probably change one thing and see that change the day after. Whereas in a large business, like an enterprise, you'll make changes, but how quickly you see those results and how quickly those people can roll out and get it to the teams and then get onto the ground is so difficult and it takes so much time. So they're looking at those automation pieces right from the top. And we had the director of Roccaforte Hotels, the CTO from Roccaforte Hotels on last week, and he was talking about the fact nothing like a pandemic to help you make decisions.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, and it's, you know, crisis creates change, and I think often in a positive way, because you're forced to make decisions you never would normally make. And you were just discussing that then, saying how change management can be a bit tricky, but actually not making decisions is even worse, right? Sitting there and festering on a problem is very problematic.
Oh, definitely. I think the industry seems to be looking at what's happening around us now as the new normal, and I really don't like that phrase because everybody was using it around the pandemic, and it was initially assumed to mean that everything was going to be off-premise and there'll be no restaurants anymore. Yeah. And I don't think we ever believed that if you're in the industry. But the new normal of, again, higher costs, base to work off, more challenging consumer expectations or demands, right? And then staffing challenges aren't going away, right? I think like operators are realizing that's probably an environment we're going to be operating in for the next 5 to 10 years. So
for
make
sure.
the decision now rather than waiting 3 years and going, look, we're too slow.
Yeah. And I think the industry's been guilty of being slow in the past in terms of whether it's tech adoption, whether it's adopting, you know, new laws that are coming, not new laws, but new trends that are coming in. I think it's always been, and purely because they are so hyper focused on delivery that sometimes they forget the other stuff. Or not forget it, but just, it just gets kicked down the road. They can, right? So, I was guilty of that myself in operations. So, look, I mean, and what about, Nori? You've talked about AI. You've talked about the operating platform. What does it look like in the future? You've just talked about the CPU project you're on. What else you got planned for this year?
Yeah, quite a bit, right?
Or is that enough? I feel like I'm putting it on you.
No, I think if you look at our roadmap, we have a kind of 5 or 10 year plan where we want to be the kind of de facto hospitality product. Globally, like that operating system for whether you have one store or 1,000, we want Nori to be the product you use.
Great.
Which means that you need to consistently be adding value all the time, right, in order to achieve that kind of growth. So typically we look at the business and go, what is our fundamental? We want to be the product that delivers the biggest financial return to our customers, not faster to do work, not better. Better, faster, better UX and faster is just expected, right?
Yes.
So it's like, can you deliver the financial
outcome? Well, that's the other issue now with tech, is that the expectations have changed as well.
So for us, it's like, okay, our kind of bread and butter is that prime cost piece initially. So how do you manage that? What wraps around that in terms of not just staffing in terms of productivity, but how do you retain staff? How do you use data to know who's at risk? How do you use data to retain your teams, train your teams, develop people are there? And then all across on the COGS side. So we want to keep getting deeper there around supply chain, inventory on the labor side. We've launched Nori Pay, which is automated payroll. We're looking at the further automation from procurement. We've launched the AI CPU for production kitchens as well. We're launching a capital product, which will be lending for operators as well, because we have the data down to EBITDA, so we know with pretty quick analysis what the payback period could be like. So we look at the value chain going, people need cash to open venues, they need to be profitable to make sure they can repay the cash, and they need to keep that kind of flywheel moving. We feel like we're uniquely
placed.
Isn't
it crazy that no one's ever thought of doing that before based on the data you already have?
Yeah.
It just makes sense, right?
Yeah, it's just that flywheel, right? How do you keep it going?
Yeah.
And then operators can maintain the equity in their businesses and this kind of thing, right? So that's for this year.
Sounds like a busy year.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's only January. It's February. You'll be fine.
Yeah, we actually cut quite a bit. We did a kickoff in January, the annual kickoff. We cut quite a bit off the roadmap. I think last year what we had was the never-ending roadmap there. And it was like focus, right? I think focus wins the day. If the product feels unfocused or the quality's not there in certain areas, in terms of expectations, you need to really keep focused.
And how do you do that? Because you're an interesting individual. You've had success in what you've been doing. How do you stay focused? Because I imagine for you, the urge to do more quickly is there in you, I imagine, being an entrepreneur. And how do your team keep you from doing that?
It's exactly what you just said, team, right? I think,
they lock you in.
Yeah, I think you have to have a really strong team that knows the problem space really well. Which we do, and has kind of like, you have the relationship there for people to go, no, look, like, you're It's just too much, right? Yeah. It's just so that's important. I think it has to be like the yin to your yang, right? I think one of our head of engineering says, I always feel like the guy who says no and comes into these meetings. It's like, yeah, well, I think you need some of that like boundless energy to go, let's do next thing to try and get through tough challenges. And then also you need the realism and pragmatism of someone to go, let's take 20% of this and do that, because that'll be a win.
It's a great idea, but yeah. Let's do that next year. No, I love it. Look, and I think you guys, we were just talking off air about your marketing. There's been a distinct change in the way you guys are approaching the market. And sorry, not that like that, but in terms of representing yourself. And I it looks really cool. And I don't know, you mentioned someone's name who was responsible for that, and we'll give her a shout out.
Yeah, Daisy and Pablo. Yeah.
Pablo, I've met as well. Yeah, great guy. Yeah, really cool team. So, and it's exciting stuff for Nori. If people want to get hold of you and find out more about Nori, how do they find you?
Yeah, look, I suppose direct website, www.nori.ai, N-O-R-Y, not N-O-R-I, like the seaweed wrap.
that obviously happens a lot since you're saying that, right?
there or LinkedIn, like Nori, you can find us, or True Tech on Toast.
Yeah.
We're obviously a partner in there. So
yeah, come and find Nori on the marketplace. Yeah. And I think what's really exciting this year is about what you guys are planning on doing. And I urge people just to reach out. I think just first to understand what you can do for them, because I think that's sometimes, you know, the sales process is a bit broken sometimes in hospitality and with suppliers selling in. I think just reach out and have a chat, I think, to you guys, because I think everyone I've met so far from Nori has been really really invested in what we do as an industry, which I found quite refreshing. And that's not always the case, right? So I think if anyone's listening, reach out, have a chat, and just see what they can do for you. But thank you for coming along to our crazy event today. not that you planned to, I just think I just made you. But it's been great. Are you going to hang around a bit, or have you got to get off to a meeting? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'll be hanging around. Check out the next panel.
Yeah, who's next? Operations next, I think. Yeah. So James Brown is James. I can't say his name without thinking of James Brown. But he's joining us on stage, and it's going to be a good afternoon. So thank you very much, Connor, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Cheers, man. Thank you. Bye bye.